Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield, to Knightstown to Greensburg. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine. With care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future in Decatur County. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
Hammer and Nigel.
You believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there. Happy Tax Day, everybody. Your taxes are due the 15th. And just as a side note, this weekend, Iran fired off a bunch of suicide drones and missiles towards Israel that were also funded by your tax dollars. What do you think about that, Hammer?
Well, thank God that in response, Israel used their defense system that was also funded by your tax dollars. So at one point, missiles were being shot and missiles were being shot down, all funded by our tax money.
Wow.
Good times.
Yeah, I was sitting there in my garage Saturday flipping back and forth between the Masters and the Iranian attack against Israel. It was like they knew it was coming. They telegraphed the whole damn thing. It was kind of surreal to sit there and watch that in real time. Yeah, about 300 suicide drones are now crossing Iraq. They're going to be over in Israeli airspace in 2 hours. And what happened, I think pretty much we all knew, is that they all got shot down.
Right.
Every one of them.
This reminded me a lot of what Fatboy used to do over in North Korea. Iran just wanted to look like they were this major player to their people. Because their state-run media,
oh, yeah,
that's going back to Iran, makes it look like, you know, they bombed the entire world and they're a major player now.
Yeah, they're propaganda is the perfect word. They're making it look like they flattened Tel Aviv.
Right.
Now, look, I'm not saying it didn't get scary. I'm not saying a hot war there isn't going on. I'm not saying that it couldn't possibly escalate further. World War III was a huge trending topic on X over the weekend.
But it always is.
It always is.
Rosie O'Donnell could pass gas and it's going to trend. World War III, here it comes. But here's the thing that I don't understand, Nige. Here's what has me perplexed. So the Iranians, they fired off a bunch of drones and missiles.
Yes.
But Joe Biden told them don't.
Mr. President, to Iran in this moment.
Don't.
Narrator, but they did.
Has don't from Joe Biden worked at all? Because he uses this line a lot. He uses don't more than he uses that deer wearing Kevlar vest joke.
When he's talking about grabbing the guns?
Right.
What do you need an AR-15 to hunt for? The deer wearing a Kevlar vest?
I mean, he's good for that joke 2 or 3 times a year. But how many times does he say don't when he's trying to figure out foreign policy, and it fails every time, right?
Here's what you need to know. This is the first time that Iran has directly attacked Israel and not used a proxy like Hezbollah or Hamas or the Houthis or whatever. So the question everybody was asking Saturday, what is the significance of Iran directly attacking Israel for the first time in the history and not using a proxy? The significance is, ladies and gentlemen, that it's a weak, feckless administration in charge, and they are tiptoeing ever so lightly to that line to see how far they see what they could get away with.
Remember when Donald Trump was the president, and he blew Soleimani off the map. All they found left was a finger with a ring on it. And the Iranians didn't do a damn thing.
They didn't do D word. I almost said it.
Good save.
Sorry.
Good save.
Oops.
They sat there and took it. But yet Joe Biden turns around and goes, don't. The first thing they did was to do it. So that tells you all you need to know about what the world, not just Iran, but the world thinks about Joe Biden.
Well, now the United States and the administration, the Biden administration saying, hey, we got Israel's back. You know, we support their right, but we're not going to do anything. We're not going to be involved in any counterattack that Israel might be involved with, a response.
Why does Israel always get a lecture when they want to
defend their homeland?
Defend themselves.
Hey, and look, just to be clear, they didn't ask for our help. They're doing a pretty damn good job themselves, the IDF especially, of defending their country. Now, the U.S. and the United States, even Jordan, even the U.K. helped shoot down a percentage of those drones and missiles. But it was mostly Israel and that unbelievable technology that they have, the Iron Dome.
Which we've paid a little bit for.
Oh, sure.
So again, our tax dollars sent the missiles and our tax dollars shot down the missiles. So most of the radical left, they hate Israel. They feel like they're the aggressors in this whole thing. But every once in a while, somebody pops up as a voice of reason. And I don't know what happened with his stroke, but post-stroke John Fetterman has been pretty based. So take a listen to this. This was the
senator of Pennsylvania.
Right. This is Fetterman on CNN talking with Jake Tapper.
Well, a couple of things, actually. I think it really demonstrates how it's astonishing that we are not standing firmly with Israel, and there should never be any kinds of conditions on all of that. When a nation can launch hundreds of drones towards Israel, and I'm not going to be talking about conditions ever. And second, I think that also was Iran had to have some fireworks after Israel smoked that Iranian general, and I'm here for that. And I think it's just a matter of theater part of it as well, too. And it demonstrates how unstable things are and why we need to lean in and stand with Israel.
Well, war is theater. But yeah, you're right. The Fetterman, boy, that stroke erased the woke.
It did.
Out of him.
He's been a totally different person following the stroke. Now, I know the conspiracy theorists are going, because it is a totally different person. But for argument's sake, let's say that it's the same John Fetterman here. Yeah, it's night and day. So Donald Trump, he was doing a rally this past weekend. He's on the campaign trail. And this is when a lot of the drama was going on.
Yeah.
You know, the missiles were in the air. The drones were in the air. Everybody knew what was happening. Donald Trump was doing a rally.
I think this was in Pennsylvania, actually.
And shared his thoughts on the leadership of Joe Biden.
Has anything that he's done turned out? Everything he touches turns to shit.
Why is it funny to me when he cusses? I don't know. I just laugh.
You find that enjoyable?
I do.
Well, tell you what, Nige. Here comes great moments in Trump swearing history.
Yeah!
Donald Trump talking about ISIS.
ISIS is making a tremendous amount of money because they have certain oil camps, right? They have certain areas of oil that they took away. They have some in Syria, some in Iraq. I would bomb the shit out of them.
I was on the campaign trail.
So amused by that. I don't know why.
And that seems to be his word of choice.
If we are attacked, somebody attacks us, wouldn't you rather have Trump as president if we're attacked? Oh, we'll beat the shit out of them.
He's a good cusser, too.
He is. Does it with some vigor. And last but certainly not least, this is, I think, one of your favorite clips of all time, Nige.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired.
Great moments in Donald Trump's swearing history. Hey, tickets are going fast furious for our Tales from the Track event presented by Relay Indiana. So our promotions department, they give us a little email update every morning. Less than 100 remain. So we're over half the allotment sold already in just a couple days.
Sold about 55% of the tickets, so get on it.
Yes, less than 100 remain. It's going to sell out probably this week. So if you want to come to our event, it's Monday, May 20th, over at the Stutz building, the Vision Loft at Stutz. Scott Dixon is our guest. Hotel Tango, they are providing the libations, dinner, drinks. Scott's going to sign stuff, take pictures with you. It's a really cool, fun event, and it kickstarts race week. It's Monday before the Indy 500. Get your tickets now before it sells out. go to the events page of WIBC.com. We've also got the link pinned to the top of our Facebook and Twitter, Tales from the Track, presented by Relay Indiana with Scott Dixon. Buy your tickets right now.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hello, my name is Nigel. Hammer's right over there with a special guest on the hotline.
Eddie White is with the Indiana Pacers, Pacers Sports Entertainment. And Eddie, there's a lot of fun things happening over that big building over there on Pennsylvania Street right now. What's the vibe?
The vibe's unbelievable. But let me just remind your listeners of why you two are the greatest people on earth. How you can go within minutes from talking about that dumb, fat bastard in North Korea and then talking to me, another dumb, fat slob, is just amazing. How you, now, the only thing I will say is I have better hair than that prick. I really do. Anyway, having said that, this has been a really – let's go back. Okay, let's go back. Things just don't happen overnight. Let's talk about the Pacers. From 22 to 23, that was from the year before last to last season, we had a 10-win plus. We improved by 10 wins. From last year to this year, we improved by 12. Pacer fans are smart. They knew this was a process. I think we're a little bit ahead of things. I think anybody would admit that, but we are headed in the right freaking direction. You think we're doing this right now without Mathurin? It's giving guys like Walker and these other guys to get some extra minutes. Now, the Fever, they went from, I think, 10 games up. They got the number one pick last year. They improved by 10 games. Now we got the number one pick tonight. I have no idea who they're taking. but that's what we got to say. Sorry. And they're going to improve by probably 15 games going next year. I tell you what, Pacers Fever, if they were a stock, I'd buy everything into it. Things are great. To answer your question, I don't know if we've had a better vibe, a positivity. It's good for our city. It's good for our state. And I'm so happy for our ownership and a lot of people who worked a lot. Listen, Kevin Pritchard and Lynn Dunn, let's make no mistake, they are the architects of these two franchises, and those two people should be given a lot of credit.
So let's just, for argument's sake, wink, wink, say that the Fever draft Caitlin Clark of Iowa tonight. Are we seeing, like, major ticket sale upgrades already?
Well, is that the guard from Iowa?
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure where she is.
Thought I saw her on Saturday Night Live over the weekend.
Oh, really? Is she related to Dick Clark?
I don't believe she's part of that Clark family.
Was she on the episode with Bobby Rydell came on? I'm not quite sure. Okay. Ticket sales have been very good since I think people saw that we had the number one pick. It's very similar to last year when San Antonio got the number one pick and nobody knew who they were going to take,
right.
Their ticket sales went up. And I think, you know, if you look at the history of the WNBA, and Lynn Dunn was there, when teams have taken back-to-back number one overall picks, that's the key word, because you're getting the best of the best, good things happen. And Aaliyah Boston, we took her last year. Look, she was an all-star her first year. She was rookie of the year. She's now a star in broadcasting. She's unbelievable. Our local high school thing, the big dinner they're having, she's going to be like the MC and the guest speaker. So she's been a delight to add to our community. And now we're going to add whoever it may be. It may be Shirley Schwartz from Yeshiva. I don't know. Whoever we add tonight with the number one overall pick is going to be add gloriously to us. And to answer your question, yes, ticket sales are up a skosh.
Angel Reese from LSU, the number one draft pick by the Indiana Fever. Could be.
I wouldn't bet on it. Angel, the name Angel. What did Billy Joel sing the other night when they cut him off? Only the good die young. Nah, I don't think Angel. No Angel. I'm going to pass on the Angel.
Eddie White of the Pacers with us. And Pacers have made it into the playoffs. And we're talking legit seven-game series, not this play-in round stuff. And it's against a team that I don't like very much, Eddie. It's the Pacers. It's the Bucks. I know it's a new era. It's, you know, a lot of scoring with this Pacers team. But I'm ready for some animosity. I'm ready for some trash talk. I don't like Milwaukee. I don't think Milwaukee likes Indiana. I'm here for it. Let's go.
Oh, absolutely. Let's remember back when we had the ball controversy. Remember when Giannis had that game and scored all those points and they thought we had the game ball and they took the game ball and he went running down the tunnel.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Add to the intrigue. Now, we all know, because we haven't been to playoffs for a while, but a lot of us have been around. We remember the glory days when it seemed we were going to playoffs every year. There, it is night and day, regular season to playoffs. That's why NBA playoff basketball is fantastic. There's adjustments that are made. There's more time between games. You don't. This isn't March Madness one and done. You got to beat somebody four times, and that's tough to do. But I love our team. I mean, somebody needs to tell me, okay, we are getting better defensively, but when T.J. McConnell is on the run that he's on from shooting the three, and look what Halliburton did today, this year. He did stuff that's only been done once before in the history of the league with Muggsy Bowes with all those assists and lack of turnovers. You know, everybody knows their role. Jalen Smith, Obi Toppin coming. Our bench is the best bench in the NBA. We have, and don't mistake this, Pascal Siakam. He is now blended in. He's been there. He's done that. He's almost, remember way back in the day, we got David West and he was the adult in our locker room.
Yeah.
Well, he's the adult in our locker room with a ring. And that is very, very important. Now, one last thing. Fans and media are getting caught up in the thing like, oh, you know, I don't like this. Everybody's picking the Pacers to win. Do you think the players and Rick Carlisle read that? Trust me, I've been in this business too. The players and the coaches don't give a crap. They know they got a good opponent coming up, but if we play to our capabilities, we will advance to the next round.
And I've missed this, Eddie. I've missed seeing the bars downtown hopping, you know, the warm weather, playoff basketball, the field house rocking. It's been a little bit. I've missed it.
And how about this one? You know, in the past, we've had the pep rally outside, you know, in front of Gainbridge. Now we have the Bicentennial Unity Plaza. It's going to be unbelievable. I cannot wait for playoff games downtown Indianapolis. It's going to be unbelievable. And let's win a couple rounds, and then we can have the three greatest words in the summer in Indianapolis: Pacers and Racers.
I'm here for it.
You guys thought I was going to say Hammer and Nigel, did you? Egomaniac.
You got me.
Well, you guys are the second best three words in Indianapolis at any time of the year. But in the summer, it's Pacers and Racers.
I like the sounds of that. Game one is this Sunday in Milwaukee. Don't know the time yet. We'll find that out later. Eddie White, you're the best. Thanks, man.
Nigel, one last thing. Hey, Hammer, one last thing
right
for
here.
Hammer. Trivia question. Hammer, this is for you, baby. You ready?
Let's go.
Who is seventh in the country in Division II in the NCAA in saves in baseball and leads the GLVC in saves and is the best relief pitcher in the history of the game?
Probably from the Fighting Greyhounds of the University of Indianapolis, and I think it's that sidearm white kid.
Yep, that's the kid, that white kid. He's unbelievable, that guy. I know who the hell he is, but I know where he gets his genes from. It ain't his dad. Certainly,
it's got to be from his mama, that's for sure.
You got that right. Love you guys. Go Hounds, baby. Go Hounds. Go Pacers. Go Fever. Woo, baby.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
The only way to bag a classy lady is to give her two tickets to the gun show.
It's Monday Gun Day with the Gun Guy.
Just watch out for the guns. They'll get you.
Guy Wilford.
Stop calling your arms guns.
The Hammer and Nigel Show.
My name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there. On the hotline, licensed firearms instructor and 2A attorney. Host of the Gun Guy Show right here Saturdays on 93 WIBC. It's Guy Wilford. Guy, how are you?
Man, I'm great, and thanks as always to our sponsor for Monday Gun Day. That's Premier Arms in Brownsburg, with the largest selection of new, used, and historic firearms in the Midwest, and PA Jewelers located right in the store. Check them out at 3754 South Green Street in Brownsburg or PremierArms.com.
Okay, so I got a clip from your show I'm going to play, but the clip was used by Moms Demand Action. They actually used a quote from your show to recruit for members on social media. Before we play the clip, just explain briefly what Moms Demand Action is.
Yeah, Moms Demand Action. They actually started life as a group called Million Moms for Gun Control, but they caught a lot of heat, especially on social media, because they had about 900,000 shy of a million who even liked them on social media. In fact, more than that, they were shy. But they changed the name to Moms Demand Action. They're a gun control group. They're under the Michael Bloomberg umbrella of anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment groups, including mayors for illegal guns and whatnot. And, you know, they have volunteers who show up at state legislatures or in Congress whenever there's a bill out there affecting the Second Amendment, and they're always on the side of gun control.
So they used a clip from your show to I mean, it, like, what's going on in the background of this clip while your segment is airing?
Well, I was talking about how things have changed, and in particular, I was sort of bragging on the impact of the 2A Project, the Second Amendment organization, the pro-Second Amendment organization that I founded 4 years ago, and I was talking about how for years and years, the Moms Demand Action people would be the only ones to show up when we'd have bills over in the General Assembly.
Yeah, here, let me play the clip. I'll just go ahead and play the clip that they used in their propaganda recruiting video.
You've heard me talk about this here on the Gun Guy Show before. I show up to these committee hearings. I mean, we fought for constitutional carry for 10 years. Or even like, well, I was fighting for the self-defense immunity bill that I wrote, and you've heard me talk about many times here. It was introduced and championed by Jim Lucas. We'd show up to fight for that bill. It'd be me, the local NRA guy, and an entire room full of ladies or people in red T-shirts to say Moms Demand Action. And let me tell you, they're vocal, man. They clap. They boo. They make it obvious where their sentiments lie and what they want legislators to do. And the dynamics in the room make a difference.
And so, and in the background, they're showing different pictures of Moms Demand Action people with the red shirts in the state house and on the stairs and protesting. But they failed to, they didn't finish the clip, right? They failed to inform the people of something additional.
Well, that's right. And I said the most important part after that, which is that, you know, I got sick of the Moms Demand Action people being the only people who would show up to committee hearings and whatnot. So we organized a 2A project. And you know what? We started filling those rooms. And what they really left out conspicuously is that every one of the bills that I mentioned, like the self-defense immunity bill that I wrote in 2019 and constitutional carry, we got all those passed. The opposition of Moms Demand Action. So I was saying that, you know, they're completely ineffectual. They show up, and you got to, you know, they're participating in the process. You got to give the devil his due in the sense that these folks show up and participate in the process. And I was saying, you know, I'm proud of gun owners because through the 2A Project, we've started showing up too, but we need more of that. And we don't want to be outnumbered, even though, again, we continue to win those battles. We don't want to be numbered in those committee hearings or in the state house generally, because the dynamics of who shows up can make a difference in some of the legislators' minds. So I was giving them credit to some degree, but then proceeded to go into how bad we whipped their ass. They don't have a single victory that they can point to say, well, we showed up and we beat that bill. Right. And because we ended up winning every damn one. So it was kind of ludicrous. And so I wrote out that response because this is on their Twitter. In fact, I reposted it with my response and said, you know, you kind of left out the most important part here, which is that we won on every one of these things. And we've dramatically increased the participation of gun owners. And so that's all. You know, to me, the point that they completely left out. But I just got a big kick out of the fact that Moms Demand Action, of all people, was using a clip from my show to try to gain members. And they started off saying something like, no one can dispute the power and impact of Moms Demand Action. I'm like, oh, I'll dispute power and impact all day long because you haven't won anything, not in Indiana, certainly.
To put this into my world, Guy, to like bring this into my world here, this is like being a Tennessee Volunteers fan. We've got the biggest stadium. We put 100,000+ people in there. It's much bigger than Georgia's. And then Georgia comes in and beats the hell out of us every single year.
That's right. Now, you still want the big crowds, right? You still want the support.
Right. We got the crowds. And crowds not the problem. You
know, that's right. Well, yeah, that is the perfect analogy to Moms Demand Action now that I think about it.
Guy Relford with us. It's Monday Gun Day. Guy, today is the solemn anniversary of the FedEx shooting 3 years ago, a FedEx facility near the airport. Some lunatic piece of garbage walked in close to 11 o'clock at night, opened fire. And this was because of what some people would say was the prosecution in this county, Marion County, dropping the ball on a red flag case. So before we get into the blame game, if you will, please reset what the red flag law is for Indiana.
Yeah, and we were actually the second state in the country to pass one of these. And what a red flag law does, guys, is it actually allows for the seizure of firearms from someone who's not been convicted of any crime. So you don't have to be convicted of anything. The police can, on a report that you're dangerous, quote unquote, can actually seize firearms without a warrant. And that's where a lot of due process concerns come in. But then a judge reviews the report on why the guns were seized for probable cause to believe the person's dangerous. And then you get a hearing, and it's supposed to be within 14 days in Indiana, where you can go in and have representation and argue your case as to why, in fact, you're not dangerous and your guns ought to be returned. But red flag laws allow the seizure of firearms from people that have not been convicted of any crime, and that's why they're so controversial.
And due process is a big part of this. But you said earlier it's expected that within 14 days there's some sort of action, and there's questions about whether or not that happened in regards to the FedEx shooter.
Yeah, well, what is supposed to happen is that once firearms are seized, then within 48 hours, the police who seize the firearms have to submit a report to the prosecutor's office and to a judge for a judge to determine probable cause on dangerousness. In Marion County, and they've since changed this specifically because of the FedEx case, but for years and years, they changed the system a little bit in Marion County where the police would give their report on dangerousness after guns were seized to the prosecutor's office, in this case to Ryan Mears' office, then the prosecutor's office would decide whether to submit it to a judge for it to go any further or not. And unfortunately, in the case of the FedEx shooting, this one just went in, sat in the Marion County prosecutor's office with no action whatsoever for months and months and months after the FedEx shooter was reported by his own family, his mother and his sister, to be dangerous. Police showed up, found a shotgun he'd bought there, seized the shotgun, found some white supremacy stuff, some things that were concerning in his room, then submitted their report to the prosecutor's office. The prosecutor never acted on that. It never got considered by a judge. It just sat in the prosecutor's office. And as a direct result, the chief judge in Marion County changed the whole system, and now they bypass the prosecutor's office altogether, and the police officer submits their report directly to the judge, who determines probable cause and whether then there's a need for a hearing.
Guy, if anybody has any questions for you, if they want to pick your brain, maybe they want to be trained in firearm safety, how do they find you?
Best way is to contact me through Twitter. Just @GuyRelford on Twitter, @GuyRelford.
Guy, you're the best.
Thanks,
thank
buddy.
You so much, man.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Coming up after 4 o'clock, an update on the hush money trial kicking off for Donald Trump in New York. Right now, Hammer, I thought of you because your family likes to play Monopoly, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it gets violent.
It's dangerously unhealthy in our house.
So Margot Robbie, who was said to be producing a live-action Monopoly movie after the success of Barbie. Does that interest you at all?
Is Margot Robbie going to be nude? That's my question.
I don't think she was nude in Barbie, and it was pretty successful. So,
but she was nude in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes, she was.
So that's kind of what I'm hoping for here. Other than that, probably not. I love Monopoly. It gets heated in our house. Tables get flipped. People start to filibuster. It's kind of a big deal. But I don't know if we need a movie.
My thing is, if it's just because Margot Robbie is producing a movie, she was one of the producers for Barbie. If they don't have Greta Gerwig writing and directing the movie, like she did in Barbie, Greta Gerwig wrote and directed Barbie, got a bunch of awards, a bunch of Oscars. Then it's not going to be, just because she's producing something doesn't mean it's going to be successful.
What if Tarantino directs it? People start getting shot on, like,
then,
you know, Baltic Avenue, the cheap properties. And
then I will. Then I would be interested in that.
He's living in the Hollywood Hills up on the boardwalk area. Great moments in Monopoly history. I remember this like it was yesterday. I was leaving Little Caesars a couple of years ago, and there's a guy that comes walking out, and he's got a big neck tattoo because, you know, it's classy. Big neck tattoo of a pot leaf, and busting out of the pot leaf, almost like the Kool-Aid guy, was the Monopoly guy with his dong hanging out.
That's where you stop that man immediately and ask to take a selfie with him. Real quick, some mood music here, Allison. The soothing, soulful sounds of a band called Tool. Their lead singer, Maynard James Keenan. I'm a Tool fan. I've met Maynard James Keenan before. Totally cool guy. I was intimidated as hell.
You wouldn't think a hard rocker would be named Maynard.
Maynard James Keenan is now enforcing a no phone policy at his concerts because it's rude and distracting. He says it keeps you from living in the moment. Is this something? I don't know. I see that kind of thing. It's one thing for comedy shows. Like Dave Chappelle does this thing.
Right.
You can't bring cell phones into his shows. But a concert? Come on. Let the fans do their thing, man.
And, man, I don't like these no phone policies. I fight with Tony Kennett about this. I don't like it in schools, and I don't like it in concerts, because what if some bleep goes down and you have to call 911?
Sure.
You have to call somebody to get you safe. You know, I don't like it at all. I mean, not to be a Debbie Downer here, but the FedEx facility 3 years ago, no phone policy. Maybe if somebody had access to a phone quicker, they could have called the authorities quicker. I don't like that.
But I think at concerts, too, people like to memorialize. They like to, they're still living in the moment, but they want to, like in a Dave Chappelle show, they're trying to catch him, right?
Right.
Somebody's just filming him, trying to catch him to say something transphobic. But I think it's different for music concerts.
And people can share the stuff and promote the band.
Sure.
I'm with you on that. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer and Nigel.
You believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
Hello, my name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there. That hush money trial for Donald Trump's about getting, it's underway in New York right now. Basically, Fat Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, saying Trump paid off Stormy Daniels as a campaign expense, violating, you know, some sort of federal campaign law, correct?
Right. That's basically it.
And it's a crazy legal theory. Every legal analyst has looked at this, including Fat Alvin Bragg's predecessor, including Merrick Garland's Justice Department. But, hey, it's Donald Trump. Derangement syndrome is strong with these idiots.
And even though those folks who are still very, very left on the political scale think this thing is a nothing burger, it's going to be hard as hell for Donald Trump to get a fair shake in New York. Because that's just the way that it is right now. There's no way they're going to find a jury that could be impartial when it comes to Donald Trump. Everybody in this country has their mind made up when it comes to the big bad orange man. Either you like him or you can't stand him. I seriously doubt Donald Trump can get a fair shake in New York.
I thought I saw a headline that a former Biden staffer was in the jury pool for the E. Jean Carroll defamation lawsuit. So, I mean, you're right. The judge is a anti-Trumper, a Fat Alvin Bragg, anti-Trump. The jury in Manhattan is full of, it's tainted for sure.
Right. Now, I'm not trying to make excuses for Donald Trump. He puts himself in a lot of positions where it's easy to go after
him. And he didn't do anything illegal here. In fact, she's the one that owes him money. She lost the defamation trial, Stormy Daniels did. She owes him $300,000 in lawyer's fees. She's the one that signed the non-disclosure agreement, and she's the one that broke it. Trump should sue her.
So before this got rocking and rolling earlier today, Donald Trump arrived at the courthouse, walked to the hallway, and addressed the media.
This is political persecution. This is a persecution like never before. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And again, it's a case that should have never been brought. It's an assault on America. And that's why I'm very proud to be here. This is an assault on our country. And it's a country that's failing. It's a country that's run by an incompetent man who's very much involved in this case. This is really an attack on a political opponent. That's all it is. So I'm very honored to be here. Thank you very much.
I'm honored to be here.
Right. I was wondering if anybody else caught that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, these people are so stupid, they can't figure out you're only making him more popular.
Absolutely. What did I say earlier? There's two things. It's designed to raise Fat Alvin Bragg's political profile, which it could, but it's also designed to diminish Trump's, which it won't. I mean, several ridiculous indictments and charges during a campaign. The judge told Donald Trump in this case, you have to be here every day. If you're not, then you go to jail.
And they slapped a gag order on him after he made that speech this morning. So the media and everybody else, Alvin Bragg, you name it, they can bump their gums and try to taint this story. Donald Trump is not supposed to say anything.
You said taint.
Allison, let's do some legal stuff. Crime, punishment, judges, legal stuff. So O.J. Simpson's last will and testament was filed in Clark County in Nevada on April 12th. That's 2 days after he died. O.J.'s longtime lawyer, Malcolm Laverne, was named as the executor of his estate, with Simpson's son Justin.
Executor,
yeah. I'm sorry, being named his successor.
I think this is funny you use the word executor. Talking about O.J. Simpson.
So basically, the will and the lawyer are saying that even though the Goldman family is allegedly owed $100 million, they're going to work to make sure that they don't receive a single dime from O.J.'s will and his estate.
Well, I hope the Goldmans are working equally as hard to get their hands on it.
An attorney for Goldman's family stated that the family is owed $100 million, but Laverne, the attorney, said, quote, "We'll do everything to ensure Goldman receives zero
from the estate.
Ugh. So in other OJ news now, the original white Bronco from the iconic Chase is about to hit the auction market.
You're kidding.
So OJ's former agent and two other acquaintances, friends of Al Cowling's, who has also passed away, they are the ones that have the title to the white Bronco.
Well, Al Cowling's was the one that drove it.
Right.
He's driving it, yeah.
Now, for the last about a year and a half, it's been part of the Alcatraz Crime Museum down in Rocky Top.
No kidding.
Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
Know that. I drive to Pigeon Forge to see that.
I know. I need to go check it out before it's too late. They've got that. They've got the Bonnie and Clyde car that was shot up there. It's supposed to be pretty cool. But now, since the juice has kicked the bucket, it looks like they're trying to strike while the iron's hot. They're looking for $1.5 million. So my question to you, Big Nige, could you drive a vehicle, doesn't have to be OJ's white Bronco, could be anything, that you knew was previously owned by a heinous criminal or if a crime was committed in that vehicle?
If I had enough money to bid on the white Bronco, I would, and then I would give the money to the Goldmans and then have it publicly, like, demolished at a junkyard.
Okay.
Make an event out of it.
I could
see that.
That's
what I do.
Because sometimes we hear these questions when it comes to real estate. Could you move into a house if you knew like a series of grisly homicides took place in there?
I don't think so. Could you?
I totally could.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. I mean, if it's a good house and the structure is good, I mean, what are the chances it happens twice? So I think I'd take my chance. Today is tax day. Allison, do we have any tax-themed music here? Little tribute for tax day.
There you go.
Great moments in tax history. One of my favorite episodes of The Simpsons, where the news anchor, Kent Brockman, is interviewing people in line who waited until the last minute.
This is Kent Brockman live at the Springfield Post Office on tax day. It's literally the 11th hour, 10 p.m., and tardy taxpayers are scrambling to mail the returns by midnight. Sir, why did you wait until the last minute to pay your taxes?
Because I'm an idiot. Happy?
Of course.
Like, that's how every one of those interviews is supposed to be, right? Krusty the Clown. Because I'm an idiot. Is that what you want? Great moments in tax history. Oh, remember this bombshell?
We've got some significant breaking news tonight. Again, tonight we are breaking news. Donald Trump's tax returns. What we have are these two pages.
I mean, you talk about a nothing burger. I mean, even like late night talk show hosts were making fun of Rachel Maddow.
Right.
Because of that. Like, what was it? Like a copy of his W-2 from 99 or something like that? I don't know.
And then like a back page that just had a signature on it.
Yeah.
Geraldo and his vaults thought that that was a little bit overblown. And lastly, great moments in tax history. Back when Donald Trump used to be on Twitter on the regular, we would have guests come in, celebrity guests, and read his tweets.
That's right.
Here's one where people were really wanting to know about his taxes, and we had Alvin from Alvin and the Chipmunks come in and read the tweet.
The fake news media, just like election time 2016, is bringing up my taxes and all sorts of other nonsense with illegally obtained information and only bad intent. I paid many millions of dollars in taxes, but was entitled, like everyone else, to depreciation and tax credits.
Great moments in tax history.
Hammer and Nigel presents...
Is...
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah. Is this anything?
All right, let's rock and roll.
Yeah, Hammer, how do we play? Is this anything?
I will run some stories by you. You break down all the information and give us a verdict. Is the story anything or not?
Easy enough.
TikTok is all about something called April Theory. After some woman's video about it went viral. April Theory.
All right.
Take a listen and see if she motivates you.
April Theory is when life starts to get good. Spring is starting in April. The weather gets nicer. Energy just shifts. I don't know about you guys, but I felt it. So if you've been feeling really stagnant in life, trust me, this is the month when things are gonna get really good for you. Things are warming up just in time for summer. This is when the little buds on the trees come. January, February, and March was all preparation for what is about to happen in April.
Yeah, I'm all about it. April Theory totally makes sense. I don't think that she's made any sort of discovery, groundbreaking discovery here. Everybody knows when April rolls around, it's when it starts to get warm. Like this weekend was gorgeous in Indianapolis. And I mean, I was outdoors from morning to night. Yesterday was even warmer than it was Saturday. Took like a long 2 mile walk, listened to the Traders Point sermon on live online, watched golf, opened up all the windows in the house. There's a nice breeze flowing through, maybe a cocktail or two during the back nine. That's when the Masters really starts, the final round anyway. I love this woman's theory. I don't think it's anything groundbreaking. I've always looked forward to April. And I've always looked forward to the Masters because that really is the first thing, the event that ushers in spring. And you are a couple of days away from May. And next thing you know, we're racing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
I love that. So if you're in your car right now or maybe in your office, a little survey. If you cut grass this weekend, on the count of three, raise your hand. One, two, three.
Raising your hand?
Well, yeah. My son cut the grass.
That's what sons are for.
I'm at the age now where I can delegate and make Jacob cut it. But yeah, pretty much everybody in my neighborhood was out this weekend with the lawnmower Saturday or Sunday. Is this anything? A motorcyclist in Michigan was arrested after antagonizing a police officer, speeding off, popping wheelies, and then ultimately running out of gas. Here's some of the chatter between officers and a police helicopter during the pursuit.
Trying to antagonize me.
He's doing a wheelie on a freeway. Very nice. All right, he's crawling. I don't know if he ran out of gas or not. He might be out of gas. Looks like he's giving up.
Yeah, and they arrested the guy. And look, if you're going to antagonize police and try to be a badass on your motorcycle, might want to make sure the gas tank's full. Idiot. And look, I'm sorry, those guys, they put themselves at such risk because if they hit I drive a truck. I saw a couple of guys weaving in and out of traffic after the show 65 northbound last week. They hit my truck. They're just going to put a dent in my truck and end their lives. You know, nothing's going to happen to me, and I'm not probably necessarily going to feel sorry for them either. especially guys like that, this a-hole that's antagonizing cops and popping wheelies.
People still pop wheelies? Is that a thing? I don't think you see as many wheelies as you used to.
On my bicycle when I was a kid, I could never pop a wheelie or ride out a wheelie. I was just never a successful a wheelie popper. Were you?
A little bit, but not much.
Like those guys that could just ride wheelies for miles and miles.
No, I couldn't do that. No, I could get it up a little bit, go a couple feet, and maybe that was about it. But maybe it's because, you know, when we grew up in the 80s, that's the post-Evel Knievel era. Like, kids today, though, they grew up with Jackass and the X Games.
Yeah.
So I thought you would see more wheelies than you do. But it's very rare when you see some moron popping a wheelie these days.
The Hammer and Nigel Show. My name is Nigel. That is Jason Hammer over there. Over the weekend, while much of America was watching the Masters Golf Tournament, Iran sent about 300 suicide drones and missiles into Israel. The Israeli air defense systems knocked most of them out. Here to make sense of what really is going on, our good friend, Breitbart News International Editor Francis Martel. Francis, your 30,000-foot big picture on what you saw take place over the weekend. I mean, it seems kind of humiliating for Iran, and I'm wondering if there's an angle here, if there's something going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. What do you think?
I think it is, if there was an angle to this. So part of the reason I think they sent all these drones is a publicity stunt aspect of it, right? They've been selling, or, you know, they're believed to be selling these suicide drones to places like Russia. You know, they popped up in Ukraine, in the Ukrainian battlefield. They want to show off that they have this advanced technology so they can make money off of it. And they just sanctions on those products were just lifted in October from the UN. And, you know, the IDF says that 100% of the drones and 100% of the cruise missiles were intercepted. The only thing that got through were a few of the ballistic missiles. But, you know, from the horse's mouth, the IDF says 99% of them did not hit anything. So that's a pretty bad look. I mean, if you read Iranian state propaganda, though, they're saying that they hit a ton of military and intelligence targets in Israel. I've heard rumors that they're playing, like on state television, they're playing footage of unrelated fires in like South Africa and stuff, and they're claiming that that's their attack on Israel. I haven't confirmed that, but I have heard that from people who, you know, can understand what's on Iranian state television. So they're trying to make it seem like a huge success, and reality is really not matching up to that.
Francis, Jason Hammer here. It seems like everybody knew this was happening. Like, we were watching news coverage in real time, like waiting for these drones and missiles to actually get there. There was a heads up given. Did Joe Biden and the United States know that this was going to happen ahead of time?
They definitely knew something was going to happen ahead of time. It's very possible that our intelligence intercepted exactly what beforehand, and if not us, the Mossad, because they had trackers where, and it's incredible to live in this day and age, right, that as a civilian in the United States, you could watch live tracking of these missiles. And I had someone compare it to the NORAD Santa tracker on Christmas Eve.
Right.
You watch like Santa, like, and you're, you know, I'm sitting in my house in New Jersey, you guys are, you know, at home in Indiana, and you can see this in real time. And to me, that proves to be a significant intelligence failure for Iran and a pretty big intelligence victory for, you know, either us or the Israelis. But I would be surprised if the CIA wasn't somehow involved in figuring out what was going to happen.
So what was the United States response after all this happened? It seems like they had Israel's back, but there's always a but there. They're like, hey, look, if you retaliate, we don't want to have anything to do with it. Is that kind of how it went?
Yes, I think Biden's trying to have it both ways. And something that's really unfortunate about the response to everything that's happened since October 7th in Israel is that the Biden administration is moving very politically. Everything it does regarding Israel is pointed to maximizing the number of votes that turn out in November. And so you've had these very bizarre about faces where last week, standing next to the prime minister of Japan, Biden is saying, we have an ironclad commitment to defending Israel. And then this happens, and the statement, the first thing that struck me from the Biden statement after the attack is that he claimed that Iran was targeting military targets in Israel, which it's a very specific thing to say military, which makes it sound like legitimate, right? Like that they weren't targeting cities. And, you know, do we really know that? We don't. You know, why give them the benefit of the doubt? And then there's this leaked report that apparently Biden told Netanyahu, if you attack Israel, you're on your own. We don't know where the leak came from. I wouldn't be surprised if it came from Biden, and it's intended to, you know, that it's directed toward the target audience is Muslim Americans and hardline leftists who are anti-Israel and who they don't want to stay home in November. Or worse, you know, they go out and they vote for Cornel West or something.
Right.
So that, I think, is unfortunately the top concern of the Biden administration, and you're never going to have a coherent foreign policy if you're just chasing votes.
Speaking of Biden, so I'm old enough to remember when the United States under Donald Trump's leadership blew up Soleimani and the Iranians didn't do anything. They sat there and they took it. Joe Biden comes out over the weekend and says, don't. And the next thing you know, the Iranians are firing all their drones and missiles. What does that say about Joe Biden?
I think it says that they think they can get away with it. The Iranians will always try to push the envelope as far as they can without getting into a direct war. And no one wants a direct U.S.-Iran war. Like, absolutely no one, except for maybe a couple of really crazy neocons, because Iran is a huge country with a lot of civilians. That would be a very difficult war. No one wants it. And the Iranians don't want it because the Iranian elite live very well. Like Ayatollah Khomeini lives very well, very comfortably. He doesn't want to disturb that. So they push it as far as they can. Under Trump, and I'm glad you brought this up because I've been thinking about this all weekend. People forget because this was January 2020 and some things happened a little bit later. But in January 2020, every headline in mainstream media was World War III. We're going to World War III. Trump got us into this war. Yeah. And you're right. The Iranians did almost nothing. They shot down a commercial airliner, a Ukrainian international airliner, yeah. By mistake. So that was the best they could do. This was way more significant, and it was unprecedented because it was the Iranian military. It wasn't Hezbollah. It wasn't the Houthis. So they think that they can get away with more. And, you know, to the extent when you see the leak saying that Biden told Netanyahu, we don't have your back, that really makes it seem like if the leak is true, the Iranians are right, that they don't really have to worry about the United States right now.
You mentioned World War III. That was trending all weekend on Twitter, Francis. We're speaking with Francis Martel, Breitbart News international editor. I always ask you about this every time you come on in terms of nuclear war and World War III. Is this something that you think maybe could escalate? I'm seeing that all over the place on social media if Israel decides to respond.
It could. I'm not going to lie. It could. But I don't think that, you know, we have this problem in our media where, you know, half the media will say, this is nothing. Ignore it. It's not important. And the other half will say, this is World War III. Go to your bunker right now.
Yeah.
And that's neither of those are true. We're in a middle ground. This is extremely serious. I think that the threat is, you know, is this going to embolden Iran to attack other parts of Israel? Is it going to result in uniting Iran with other Muslim neighbors? Which it looks like no. I mean, Jordan was there shooting missiles out of the sky. So it doesn't look like the rest of the Arab world in that region really wants to get into this war with Iran, which is a big reason I don't think this is going to turn into World War III. Like, no one has the appetite to back Iran. The Saudis don't. The Jordanians don't. The, you know, Dubai is not interested. Mm-hmm. So that's why I don't think it's going to turn into a huge war. Can it escalate into something where Israel is no longer a safe place? Can it devastate Israeli tourism, for example? Can it devastate the Israeli economy? Absolutely. And a weak Israel is bad news for the whole world, because Israel is the only place in the Middle East where you can be openly gay, where women have, you know, equal rights. It's a place that stands for freedom. And when it gets weak and the powers like Iran get strong, that sends a bad message everywhere. And it boils over into things like the conflict with the opposition in Venezuela. It boils over into Pakistan and India having heightened tensions. So that's what I'm worried about. I am not worried about an Iranian nuke dropping on anybody anytime soon, but the spillover effect of bad actors seeing that they could get away with bad activity, you know, in a world where the Taliban is running Afghanistan again, in a world where China is more belligerent than ever, that is the main concern here, I think.
Is this the biggest attack against Israel we've ever seen? Now, I understand October 7th happened. I'm talking in terms, I mean, missiles have been lobbed into Israel for decades and decades, but the scale and scope of what Iran pulled off, is this kind of the biggest thing that's happened to Israel?
I think in the block of time that it happened, yes.
Yeah.
I haven't done the math. I'm sure if you add up how many missiles Hamas, you know, has lobbed over the border, yes, or Hezbollah over time, it might be more. But just having one night where there's just this barrage of over 300, and having drones also, this advent where these countries that are rogue states, and they're not especially wealthy rogue states, now have access to cheap drones, that's going to be a huge threat, both for Israel and for everyone. You know, Turkey has cheap drones that they're giving to Azerbaijan that is facilitating a Christian genocide against Armenians. So every little conflict in the world can be worsened because now countries like Iran can cheaply build drones and use them and sell them. And, you know, one that also worries me about North Korea. Is this going to embolden North Korea into starting to use drones to threaten Japan and South Korea? It hasn't happened yet, but if Iran gets away with it, you know, they're going to get ideas. So that's kind of where we are with that.
And finally, Francis, before we let you go, just I know you're not a military strategist, but I just your own opinion. What do you think happens next with Israel? Do they respond? I saw some random headline on Twitter. Israeli Air Force has completed its prep for an imminent attack on Iran. Is that a possibility?
You know, if it were me, if I'm putting my military strategist hat on, I would respond indirectly. I would not just bomb Tehran. I don't think that's a smart strategy. But we have ideas. We think that Israel has really heightened cyber capabilities, and Iran has all these illegal nuclear facilities that it has, you know, underground, and it won't let the UN inspectors in. I would go for a cyber attack if it was me. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were unexplained blackouts and that sort of thing in Iran in the next few weeks. But I do think also that Israel has to do something overt just to send a message to the world that they're not going to just take it and listen to Biden. And that, I don't really know what that's going to look like. I think that might be a strike on Hezbollah or one of the proxies, the Houthis, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, any of those guys, to sort of weaken Iran from the outside and make the case. But yeah, if it was me, I would go for some sort of cyber attack that you can easily refute that it was you.
She has written plenty on Iran and Israel and the events over the weekend. You can find them at Breitbart.com. Breitbart News International Editor Francis Martel, thank you for the last minute interview request. You have a great week.
Oh, absolutely. You too. Thank you so much.
And we are giving away tickets to see Aerosmith along with the Black Crowes. Awesome show. The Peace Out Farewell Tour, January 16th, Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Brian was caller number 9. Brian, how are you?
Hey, gentlemen, I'm on my way back to work from vacation. I'm driving out here in the country.
Oh, boy.
I got to be sick, so I had to unlock my phone to get to dial, and then had to dial the number.
Okay.
Hey, that sounds great. All right, hey, we're running out of time, Brian. We don't have time for your life story, but this is how it's going to work. Here in just a moment, a certain someone is going to read off a historical fact, okay? If you can tell us who this person is talking about, we're going to give you the tickets. You got to get 2 out of 3. Now, we found out that Nigel can do a solid Steven Tyler impression.
So, doubt it.
Nigel performing as Steven Tyler. If you can figure out what he's talking about, 2 out of 3, you get the tickets. Okay, Brian?
All right.
Here we go. Number 1.
was the man who led the Continental Army to victory over the British, and they became the first president of the George United Washington. States.
I heard a George Washington in there. Yes. One down.
So bad.
All right, Brian.
That was all right.
Get this next one, and we're going to give you the tickets. All right. This is U.S. History with Nigel as Steven Tyler, number two.
In 1969, this man was the first person to walk on the moon. He was a Purdue graduate.
Who's he talking about, Brian?
John Glenn?
No, that's incorrect.
Oh.
Neil Armstrong was the first man to walk in the moon.
Right.
Hey, Allison, hit that dump button for us. Thank you.
All right, we got one more.
We got
this
one.
Is so bad.
Oh, man, come on.
One more. Get this right. We'll still give you the tickets. Number three.
On December 7th, 1941, this Hawaiian military base was bombed by Japan. Is that caused the United States to enter world?
I heard of Pearl Harbor, and there's a winner.
All right.
There we go.
So bad.
Oh, this is so fun. Brian, you are the big winner. Stay on the line. Allison will take care of you. And we've got tickets all week long. Should we do another round tomorrow?
No.
Aerosmith tickets all week long. We'll have some sort of a game for you. If you think we should do this game, let us know. If you think we should do something else, at Hammer and Nigel.
Hammer and Nigel.
You believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
You know, as radio guys, especially doing what we do on this show, Hammer, you never enjoy opening up a segment reminding people of grim anniversaries. But I do think it's incredibly important to keep the memories of the victims alive, Hammer. It's the third anniversary of the FedEx mass shooting here in Indy at the facility near the airport. 9 people killed, including the shooter. Many more wounded.
And over the last couple of years, because of this job, I've been able to strike up somewhat of a friendship relationship with the Blackwell family. And we've had Jeff Blackwell in the studio before.
Their daughter perished in that shooting.
Samaria Blackwell was 19 years old, lost her life in that shooting. And like you said, it's important to keep the legacy alive of so many people that died way too soon. And what I love about the Blackwell family is the positivity and the faith that they present. Because I don't know if I could keep it together if something like that happened to my family. But when you listen to these people talk, and I've met them multiple times at other events, again, Jeff's been in studio, the amount of grace and faith that this family has, it's impressive and it's humbling. So let's go back a couple years. This was on the 1 year anniversary a couple years ago when we had Jeff Blackwell in studio. Again, his daughter lost her life. Samaria lost her life in the shooting. And here he is talking about how he's dealing with the way life has treated him.
The reality is there are good and bad days. We're believers. We fall into our faith, and that's what's carried us through at this point, and that's what continues to carry us through. Jesus Christ has just been the way that's gone there. Again, there are good days and bad days. Some days you don't want to get out of bed, but you just put one foot in front of the other and keep going on.
I'm a believer. And I don't know that I'd ever be able to crawl out of the pit of despair. And guys like him, like Mr. Blackwell, are an inspiration. You know,
absolutely.
I listen to that and I'm thinking, oh my gosh.
You think you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
Like, just listen to the way that this family responds to the worst pain imaginable. And it gives you hope and it gives you faith. Now, the other thing to remember as we head into this somber third anniversary of what happened at that FedEx facility is that the Marion County justice system let a lot of people down, including the Blackwell family. We had FOP President Rick Snyder in studio with us talking about how the prosecutor's office dropped the ball here.
Well, the red flag law was placed into effect in 2005 after Officer Jake Laird was killed in line of duty on the south side of Indianapolis. It's actually named after him, the Jake Laird red flag law. And it was to authorize law enforcement officers in the immediacy of the moment, if they identify that someone is a threat to themselves or to others, to be able to seize those weapons and hold them to intervene and hopefully prevent something like this from occurring. But it also prescribes for due process, immediate due process for the person involved, so that there is a balance between constitutional rights of folks as well as due process and legal review of the actions by the officers. But the key component is that prior to this incident at the FedEx, the prosecutor had to initiate that filing with the court. It had to go through the prosecutor, this prosecutor. And the point that we made is it wasn't that the law did not, it wasn't that the law failed. It was that the prosecutor failed to give the law a chance to work. And that's the key component. And I think what I heard from Jeff there is a salient point, which is we'll never know because he never tried. What we do know is that if he had tried, there was a chance that it could have been interrupted. The certainty is that he didn't. And because of that, there was nothing that prevented this suspect from purchasing or obtaining additional weapons.
Yeah, the suspect, the murderer, his family begged police and the prosecutors to take his guns away. And they did, but he was able to buy more.
Right, because of the inaction of the prosecutor's office.
Boy, that would haunt me.
They just let it sit there on the desk because this prosecutor is so afraid to try. Like, he's afraid to fail. And that's not how you lead as a prosecutor. You can't be so scared to death to fail. And this is how situations like this happen. And again, when we had Jeff Blackwell in studio with us, this tells you all you need to know about the type of guy Ryan Mears, the prosecutor of Marion County, is when he was ducking the families of the victims after the investigation.
I had the president acknowledge it and come to us. We had the governor, everybody on through, but one person hasn't basically acknowledged this. Now, why I say that is after the investigation period was done of the initial thing that happened, we were called together, all the victims' families, to a substation on the west side, at which point in time, every law enforcement agency under the sun, including the local deputy, if you will, was there. And they presented all this. The U.S. District Attorney, the FBI, the World Police Organization. It was crazy how many people were there. As the things were presented, there's something that became very evident. Because everything kept circling back to this question of, why was nothing ever done about this first encounter with the police and the red flag law? Guess who was not in attendance there? I don't even have to say his name. So this really set us off, at which point in time, Chief Taylor texted him, everything else. He was supposed to have a sit down with all the families at once.
The prosecutor, the current prosecutor.
That is correct. That has never happened.
Whew. Man.
Coward.
Total coward. So again, on this somber date on the calendar, I'm thinking about my friends, the Blackwells. I'm thinking about all the families that lost somebody in this senseless act of violence, and it didn't have to be that way. In much happier news, Nige, it's a big time for those who work at Pacer Sports Entertainment.
Yeah.
Because tonight, the WNBA draft is set up, and the Fever, they have the number one pick.
When is the last time the show has talked about the WNBA draft?
I don't think ever. But Caitlin Clark is available. She's on the board, and it looks like that's who the Pacers are going to hitch. Fever are going to hitch their wagon to, and this really is a franchise-changing moment. Because ticket sales are through the roof now.
Is she the most popular college basketball player, male or female, this season?
I think so. I think so. This is a down year for male college basketball. Like, all the experts say this year's NBA draft is the worst of all time.
Wow.
So other than, like, obviously Zach Edey, who people here in Indiana are familiar with because of playing at Purdue, you know, two-time player of the year, I'd say Caitlin Clark is the most well-known, most popular college player, men or women.
She was fun to watch, man.
She was.
Yeah, I loved it.
And the Pacers, back in the playoffs. They have a 7-game series against the Milwaukee Bucks. Game one is Sunday. Here is Pacers star Miles Turner talking about the playoffs.
And, you know, it wasn't easy. It wasn't pretty. But we got to where we needed to go. And all we asked for an opportunity. You know, now it's our turn to make some noise.
Our turn to make some noise. And one of my favorite videos of the weekend was after the Pacers had won against the Hawks on Sunday, they knew they had clinched a guaranteed series in the playoffs. Coming off the court, Tyrese Halliburton channeled his inner Jim Mora.
Playoffs? Playoffs?
Was he even born when the playoffs thing happened with Jim Mora? I don't know. It's hilarious that he knows his Indiana history, though, in terms of sports.
Yeah, I'm not
iconic
sure.
Moments. Playoffs? I love it.
So here's a little mashup here. Okay. See how well Tyrese Halliburton did. This is real Jim Mora and then Tyrese Halliburton.
Playoffs?
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 I thought he did a pretty good job, man. I'm not going to lie.
That was solid.
Are you really okay?
Are you okay?
Everything's going to be okay.
Are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm pretty far from okay.
Are you okay with this? On the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Oh, yeah! Hammer, nearly a year after Fisher's City Council set a $50 a day fee for non-residents to park vehicles at the new beach at Geist Waterfront Park, a proposal could be approved Monday, today, to lower that cost to $25 a day. Are you okay with this?
Oh, what's the matter, Fishers? Not getting the turnout you want? Not getting the money you want from all of us gross, disgusting non-Fishers residents? Yeah, well, kiss the fattest part of my Beech Grove backside because we ain't going to pay the money at all. So it went from $50 to $25 in 1 year.
Yeah.
Guess what happens next year, Bal, when people aren't coming to your fancy schmancy Grey Poupon eating beachfront property. You're probably going to be making it free, begging people like us to come up there. So as far as I'm concerned, bite me. On behalf of every non-Fishers resident, bite me. I hope you don't make dollar number one, and I am 100% okay with them begging and lowering the cost.
A U.S. Navy and Coast Guard operation last week rescued three fishermen stranded on a tiny, uninhabited Pacific Ocean island for more than a week after they spelled out the word help using palm tree leaves laid on a white sand beach. Are you okay with this?
Yes, I'm okay with this.
Crazy.
This is like something from a movie, right? It's kind of like the old Castaway movie with Tom Hanks. Now, I'm reading up here a little bit. These guys were out fishing around the waters near a part of Micronesia when their boat had some sort of malfunction, and they scrambled ashore to this uninhabited island. Their radios ran out of battery power before they could call for help. So for a week, these three guys lived off of coconuts, but they did have fresh water on the boat. So they rationed out their water, and they were able to get help. Now, unlike Tom Hanks in the movie, this was an island, albeit uninhabited, that was familiar with fishermen. So people would go near this area to fish all the time. So they kind of thought they would be rescued sooner rather than later. But imagine that fear of being stuck on a deserted island, having to spell out help with the palm tree fronds, hoping somebody can rescue you. Yeah, that's something.
And in Castaway, I think he was gone for like 3 years.
Right.
I think this was for a week.
Right. The island in Castaway was not a high-profile fishing destination. It was in the middle of nowhere. But I don't know about you, but the first time I saw Castaway, that scene where the FedEx plane is getting closer and closer to the water.
Oh, that was so...
Oh, freaks me out.
Yeah.
Totally.
A protester who threatened to murder Bakersfield City Council members appeared in court crying as she faces over a dozen felony charges. Here is what she said at that recent city council meeting.
You guys want to criminalize us with metal detectors? We'll see you at your house. We'll murder you.
And she talked about, she was crazy. So she had a problem with metal detectors at the courthouse or wherever they were. Are you okay with this person?
I'm okay with the fact she was crying for having to be responsible for the crap that she said at this council meeting. Her tears are delicious to me. I wish I could lick her tears of fear and frustration. Because you're right, this woman is a total nut. In like the 7 or 8 minutes that she was at the microphone speaking to the Bakersfield City Council, she threatened to murder them like you just heard. But there was also this lovely line.
And I hope one day somebody brings the guillotine and kills all of you motherfuckers.
She seems like a delight.
Oh, she seems nice.
She seems like the kind of person you want to invite over and watch the NBA playoffs with.
Now, if you look, if you look that clip up, the next shot you see is her crying in court.
Yes. I love it. It's good for my soul, watching her bawl and cry.
Pretty delicious. Okay, finally, are you okay with this? Post Malone. He put a cover of him singing Friends in Low Places by Garth Brooks on his Instagram. Here's the clip. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not a big old song.
Yeah, man, I'm all right
okay
with that.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
He's got a country album coming out soon, doesn't he?
Like, he actually sounds country as to where Beyonce's album just sounds like it's a dance mix with, like, a little bit of a steel guitar in the background. So, yeah, that sounded actually pretty good. And great moments in Post Malone history. The last time he did a concert in Indy, he went to a nearby Olive Garden. Now, the manager at that Olive Garden was some old woman who had no clue who he was, but she got a picture next to him, and there's this guy with all these tattoos and crazy hair and this old woman with white hair who you could tell has no idea who he is getting a picture together at the Olive Garden. Great moments in Post Malone history.
The Hammer and Nigel Show. Hello, my name is Nigel. Jason Hammer right over there with a special guest on the hotline.
She is one half of the Chicks on the Right program. WIBC alum, the lovely and talented Miss Daisy joins us. Daisy, I'm a little confused here. I don't know why Iran is firing off these missiles because Biden told them don't. I can't put two and two together here. He clearly said don't.
Yeah, he did. I think don't in Farsi means I'm an old imbecile, so do the opposite of what I say.
Oh, okay. Now it makes perfect sense.
That's what it means. Yeah, I think that's me. So this administration is a complete joke with the don't stuff because they told after telling illegals to come here. In the last campaign cycle, Kamala has said, don't come to them. And now we have 10 million people sucking off the taxpayer teeth because of her saying don't. So they say don't all the time. But we know that this administration is completely weak and Biden is the weakest. I mean, he's the weakest president I've seen in my lifetime. And that's saying a lot because I lived through Carter. And we know that weak men, they create turmoil and chaos, and that's what we're seeing.
Right. And listen, say what you want about Donald Trump. Does he make a lot of mistakes? Sure. But Donald Trump killed Soleimani and the Iranians just took it. Joe Biden says don't, and they fire off missiles.
Yeah, I think Trump, he put out mean tweets. You know, I mean, like he was the guy that said the things that people are like, okay, well, that may be inappropriate to say, but he showed strength. And he was a kind of, he was a badass, and people paid attention to what he said. And we look back, we were not dealing with any of this stuff. So, I mean, people can say what they want about Trump, but I was not afraid of being in World War III or kids and grandkids being swept up in that stuff either. So we were definitely safer. I mean, John Kirby was asked this morning if America is stronger today than it was 4 years ago globally. And he actually said, out of his face, he had the audacity to say, oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I feel very comfortable in saying 100%. I mean, he also said this weekend that billions of dollars that Biden unlocked for Iran didn't go to terrorism. Like, those funds are fungible, you guys.
Laughable part here? Like, there was a meme going around social media, and it's 100% right. U.S. tax dollars are paying for these missiles to be fired from Iran. Meanwhile, U.S. tax dollars are paying for the Iron Dome defense system that Israel is using. So our tax dollars are firing and knocking down things.
Right. And we're broke. We're completely broke, like, at the same time. Like, and then I think, you know, we talk a little on our show this morning. We talk a lot about this subject. But one of the things we touched on is the fact that, like, once they're if they go through Israel and then they try to, you know, that we're next. I mean, because that's the long game. Right. I mean, they get through. They hate us. We have these people that are here in our country screaming death to America, right? So if they want to come to us and say that they want to attack us, you can't tell me that we're ready for a World War III, because we have completely relinquished our everything that we have when it comes to the military. Our military is in really poor shape, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're broke. And what we do have, the money that we are spending, is being spent on Ukrainian pensions and Ukraine's military and everybody else's military. We just don't have the money. We are broke, and we need to be spending it on ourselves and our military and building up our military resources.
And this goes back to what you originally said. Your first point was that the Biden administration is weak. I kept on seeing questions asked when this was going on Saturday. What is the significance of Iran? This is the first time they've directly launched an attack on Israel and not through their proxies, Hezbollah or Hamas. What is the significance of this? And I kept on thinking to myself, the significance is Biden is weak. They are testing the waters. They are tiptoeing to the line to see how far they can get. And Biden just said, don't. And now Biden's basically telling Israel, don't respond. Okay, we got your back, but don't respond to this.
Which they've never done before. So he said don't to Putin. He said don't to Iran, you know, and now he's saying, okay, Israel, don't fight back, which is crazy. I mean, like, why do people feel like Israel shouldn't be able to defend itself? Well, it's easy. The answer that's easy is because they're Jewish. I mean, that's what it is, right? It's because they're Jewish.
I do think, though, Iran, I think this was humiliating for Iran. And, you know, 99% of those drones and missiles were taken out by Israeli defense systems with the help of the UK and the United States.
Sure.
And then Iran issues a statement. All right, this matter is concluded now. And it's like the meme of Homer Simpson slowly fading into the ivy. It was kind of a humiliating thing. Iran.
It was, sure, it's humiliating, but they still did it.
Yes.
And it still shows how weak our president is when he's, I mean, it shows a sense that we don't have things under control from a foreign policy and national security standpoint. We just simply don't.
And what's wild to see is how the national media thinks this is fine, because you're right. You're 100% right. When Israel wants to go on the counter after somebody's done something squirrely to them, they're labeled as the bad guys here.
Yep. And that's the narrative now, which is crazy. I mean, there was a ceasefire on October 6th.
Yes.
And when Hamas came in and murdered Israelis, and they raped Israeli women, and they put babies in ovens, and they took hostages, there was no longer a ceasefire because of those actions. And it's weird that this administration, our, quote, leadership, end quote, they're not talking about that. Instead, they're looking at Israel and saying, hey, you know what, you may want to, like, hold back. Because can you imagine if somebody said that to us?
Right.
Can you imagine if all those things happened to us in our country and on our land? In our country, and somebody said, hey, you guys need to hold back. Would we do that?
No. And with Iran now saying, all right, situation's over here. That's it for us. Good night, everybody. Now, right. If, you know, Israel decides, oh, no. This is going to have some sort of ramifications here. Now they're viewed as the aggressor.
Exactly. And it's crazy that that is the case. It's crazy that in just six short months, that's where we're at from a narrative standpoint. And shame on the media for allowing that to happen. Shame on this administration for allowing that to happen. It's gross. Absolutely gross.
Chatting with Daisy from the Chicks on the Right program. Daisy, I don't know if you got full totality of the eclipse last week from your beautiful South Fork Ranch down in Texas.
We did. We were in the path of totality, which is really crazy. You guys were, and yeah. I was, which is really nuts, right? What are the odds?
Well, I think we can all thank climate change for this, at least according to Sunny Hostin of The View. She, yes. Of course, you know, the staff scientist on The View, says mm-hmm. that climate change is why the eclipse happened.
And the earthquakes, the previous earthquakes.
Yes, that's
right.
Oh,
yeah, totally. I wonder if Notre Dame is like going, can we get our degree back? Because damn.
And if you watch that clip, it was Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar that were the voices of reason.
Right.
Oh, my God. Like, it's so crazy, right? Like, what is even going on?
I can imagine a scenario where it's Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar that are saying, yeah. like, no, you're crazy. Crazy. That
right.
has nothing to do with climate change.
How are you the dumb one on The View?
Everything is borked, you guys. Like, if Trump wins the election, they're going to blame it on climate. They're going to blame it on climate change. I mean, this is what they're going to do. Everything is so stupid right now. I can't. But this is the thing. And they're constantly saying all this stuff about, because climate change is the new fear tactic in the Democrat Party, right? And listen, they're going full force on this whole meat thing, too. They don't want us to eat meat. And I'm like, oh, hell nah. You will pry it from my cold, dead hands.
Hey, you mentioned Donald Trump. Are you paying attention to the Stormy Daniels hush money trial today kicking off?
Not really. I mean, because it's just more ridiculous stuff to try to take our attention away from the stuff that is actually, I don't know, the stuff that matters. I mean, they're just like, hey, look at the porn star, everybody, because our policies suck so hard. Everybody look at the porn star. This is what they're doing. At least that's what it looks like to me.
And I don't know if that tactic is going to work this time around, because back in 19, back in 20, all the fun little progressives could say, yeah, you know what? Donald Trump is embarrassing. I don't like mean tweets. I don't like the fact that he hooked up with a porn star. Oh, so right. disgusting. And now they're all broke. And they're like, well, maybe you guys were right.
Yeah. And listen, I'm not a person that is all about the moral equivalency, and I won't use that as an argument. But it really would be kind of fun to look at, like, Congress and the Senate and say, okay, everybody here who has slept with a porn star, please step forward.
Or had an extra marital affair with their
wife. Exactly. Please. Yeah, step forward. I mean, come on. You know, it'd be like 75-80% of those weirdos.
And then some people would just lie, like Jerry Nadler. Oh, stop right. it. There's no way, even if you paid her, a porn star is funneling that hog. Sit down.
Has Jerry Nadler ever been with a woman ever? He's like a penguin. Yeah.
What are you guys doing over at Chicks on the Right?
Well, more of the same. It's probably going to be a lot of Israel talk. And I'm going to be forced to have to talk about the Stormy Daniels thing, I'm sure, tomorrow. So you guys check it out, chicksontheright.com.
Daisy, you're the best. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
You're listening to The Hammer and Nigel Show.
You know, it's funny, earlier, right before, you know, during the commercial break, I was in here and I sneezed like 3 times in a row. And I remember a day, Hammer, when you sneezed and like people would look at you like you had the plague. You were giving them the plague because of COVID, right?
Right.
And then we were talking about, oh, you the variant, BA5. I remember the variants, the COVID variants. Or, you know, everybody always talking about variants the past couple of years. And it reminded me of a meme that Elon Musk posted a couple of days ago, which is just a big billboard with a clown on it. And the clown says, where did all those dangerous variants go? You don't hear about COVID variants anymore. And a reply from a friend of the show, Alex Berenson, who was a COVID skeptic and contrarian and looked at the data, replied, amazingly, once mass RNA vaccinations collapsed, so did the virus's evolution. Must be a coincidence. You don't ever hear about new COVID variants anymore.
No.
And I don't think, and yeah, nobody's getting boosters. Nobody is getting vaccinated for COVID anymore. It's just kind of a weird thing that I noticed. Like, you don't hear about the variants anymore.
I think this is a public now that realizes that we were lied to a lot. Now, I'm not saying COVID didn't exist. COVID existed. It absolutely existed. Some people died of it. But it wasn't this horrific monster that the media tried to scare you into believing. And the more time that goes by and you realize these quote-unquote experts were just making crap up on the fly.
6 foot social distancing?
Right.
Made it up.
Right. Going into a restaurant and you have to sit down to eat, but then you got to wear a mask when you stand up to go to the bathroom. These one way in, one way out things. It's all crap that had nothing to do with whether or not you got COVID.
And again, nobody, the vaccination, the RNA vaccinations have completely collapsed. Nobody's getting it anymore. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I just, you know, food for thought there. An airline passenger claims they were extorted for a tip at the check-in counter. Hammer, an airline passenger in Jersey, the agent, you know, you check your bag, and if you go over, like, you know, 4 or 5 pounds, you got to pay an extra $50,
right,
depending on how much your bag weighs, your luggage. The agent said, don't worry, I don't see anything, but you can leave a tip right there, pointing to a spot on the counter. And the customer asked if he was for real. The guy said, yeah, and they left $5. How do we feel about tipping? Being extortion, I think, might be a strong word here. But, you know, you can either tip $5 or get charged an extra $50 to...
Right.
You know what I mean?
You know, I'm kind of torn on this because tipping culture is out of control. If you just sit at a register and take my order and then flip around the iPad expecting me to pay 20% extra... No, that's a little ridiculous. But listen, this is something folks go to Vegas do all the time. It's called the old $20 trick. Now it's the $50 trick with, you know, inflation. You ask the, you know, checkout person, hey, any upgrades available? And you slide the 20 over there. So you might get an upgraded room that would normally cost you $100 more for $20 or $50. I'll allow this.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, well, okay, so $5 if your luggage is a half pound over.
To save me 50?
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Okay.
I'll absolutely do that. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.